And welcome to the Climate Minute, your source for insight and perspective on global warming news. My name's Ted McIntyre. Today, we're happy to be joined by friend of the pod, Richard Halpern. How you doing, Richard?
I'm fine, thank you.
Good, good, good. So, Richard, there is a new question that has dropped into the world, a new thing in the world, a new question. And that question is, what is a peaker plant? And that's a question of increasing interest. What's a peaker plant? And so I thought we could have a short discussion, pretty much non-technical discussion about what the heck a peaker plant is, what it means. Does that make sense? You want to do that?
Yeah, that sounds good.
Okay. So the shortest definition of a peaker plant is that it is an electrical power generating facility, right? So a peaker plant makes electricity. But it only makes electricity when there is very high demand for electricity. Only runs a few days a year, typically, right? So it is a plant that is used at the peak of the electricity requirements, and as a consequence, only turns on a couple times a year. So that's the sort of the general generic description of a peaker plant. But it's more interesting to get a little background. So I thought we'd go through some backgrounds. So some of the kind of vocabulary words that will float around are things like base load or the load on the electric system. There's ideas about supply and demand. There's a utility, which basically for our purposes is going to be the guys who make electricity. They're the utility, right? They provide electricity and they make decisions. And so the easiest way to kind of understand in more detail what a peaker plant is to think of electricity in terms of supply and demand. Okay. So supply and demand, let's begin with the demand side. And these are fancy words, but they translate very much into exactly what people experience, right? So what's demand? As far as the utility is concerned, demand is you and me when we turn on our lights. Right, or do anything. Like the computer I'm looking at right now is making a demand on the utility, is demanding electricity, right? And so there's this demand thing, the concept of demand, and that demand varies through the course of the day. In other words, you know, when you get up, like for me, when I get up in the morning, first thing I do is go, everything's quiet, I go turn on the coffee pot, boom, all right, that's demand, right? And then you turn on the TV, there's more demand. And so you go through the course of the day, turning things on. Typically, on any given day, most electricity is being demanded about 5 in the afternoon, right? The kids are home, they're playing video games, you're getting the microwave on to cook dinner, TV, may not. So the demand starts relatively low in the morning, is a maximum sort of mid-afternoon, early evening. And then it quiets down again. So then you go into the overnight hours, you turn out all the lights, everybody goes to sleep. The only thing left running in your home is your refrigerator, basically, right? And that refrigerator runs all the time. So now if you think of it in terms of a single day, there's kind of a maximum demand in the afternoon and a minimum demand at about 3 in the morning. So from the utility perspective, they call that thing at 3 in the morning when only the refrigerator is on. That's the base load, right?
Okay.
Load is from the utility perspective is how much demand are they trying to satisfy? Because every refrigerator is a load on the electric power plant, right? So you have a concept of a base load, which is the minimum amount of electricity that the utility needs to put out 24 hours a day, right? To run stuff all the time. Because the street lights are on. I mean, there's just this minimum amount of stuff that's going on all the time. And then by late afternoon, typically, it has a higher demand and it has to generate more electricity. Does that make sense so far?
Yes, it does make sense.
Okay. So once you get this idea that there's a daily demand for electricity, you can extend that a little bit and say, well, yeah, okay. In the summertime, when it's hot, for example, you need more electricity to run your air conditioner, right? And so you can imagine there are certain days in August where Everybody's home. It's hot as blazes outside. Everybody's got their air conditioner on. And the utility, the guys who are making the electricity, they're reaching this moment where there's the most demand for electricity of the entire year, right? And they, oh my God, we can't have a blackout. We have to be generating, we have to meet this demand. Go ahead.
So if there are a number of days of hot humidity, you know, a number of days of high humidity and heat, would that then precipitate a change in demand?
Yeah, because people turn on their air conditioning, right? And so everybody wants to stay cool, and there is great demand for electricity to run. Typically, this is just the way the world is, right? Everybody wants to turn on their air conditioner on August 15th at 5 in the afternoon, right, to stay cool. And the utility sees that demand. We'll talk about the supply in a minute, but that's the kind of the demand. So from the utility perspective, the guys who make the electricity, what they see is a daily variation and then a seasonal variation in the demand for electricity, right? So there's your demand side. This is like economics 101, supply and demand, right? The flip side, from the utility is trying to satisfy that demand by creating a supply of electricity, right? And this is where the supply and demand thing gets a little bit funky for the utilities, because if you're if you make Nike shoes, or you make, you're printing copies of a spy novel, right? You can print some copies of, you can make some Nike shoes in advance and keep them in inventory, store them on a shelf. And then when demand comes along, you say, oh my God, we need 10 shoes today. I got them on the shelf. I'm going to send them out, right? So this is inventory allows you to satisfy a demand in most industries. The electric market is different because the electricity cannot be stored, right? The electricity has to be minute by minute generated to satisfy the demand.
There's no storage?
The way the system's configured now, right, we'll talk about storage. Those are new ideas, right? Those are the clean ideas, is to have electricity storage. But as it stands right now, yeah, there's no way to hold the electricity anywhere. You have to make it the moment it's being called for, right?
Okay.
And that's why you have this concept of, like, the big control room at the utility where there's lots and lots of screens, and they're looking at all the grid and who's making demand and which power plants do they have and how are they matching all that.
Oh.
That's got to be done minute by minute, right? And we'll put a link on the website to there's a display panel that you can find online of what the projected demand is. So then the flip side is the utility knows pretty much what the pattern's going to be. Right? They know that at 8 in the morning, they're going to have demand for electricity, and they're planning for that, right?
Okay. Right. So there's historical record that they rely on in order to know when to make enough supply for the demand.
Exactly. And right now, that's the magic, the secret sauce that the utilities have, is that they are matching supply and demand in some economic way, right? And that so just one other vocabulary word that we need to float around is that we use the analogy of inventory before for, like, you know, sneakers. We said Nike shoes, right? You can have Nike sneakers on the shelf ready to sell if there's a sudden demand. Well, in the utility case, they can't inventory the electricity. They can't store the electricity currently, but what they can do is to have what's called capacity, the capacity to create electricity. So instead of having stored electricity, what the utilities do is they have a bunch of power plants sitting around not being used. And when you need the electricity, they turn on this plant or they turn on that plant in order to match the demand, right? And there's a whole arcane system underneath that of who gets turned on and what. Mm. There's this ongoing thing of matching the demand to the supply to the demand. It's quite complicated, right? It's not simple stuff. So the idea is that the utility, the people who make the electricity, are required by law to have the capacity to make the electricity according to the forecasted demand. Right? So the utility is looking out 5 years saying, oh, we think in 5 years we're going to need X amount of electricity in August, so we better have a plant ready. right? And that's so the words you hear in the utility market is capacity and the capacity to make electricity, which is different from the exact amount of electricity they're making at any given moment. Okay?
Okay. That makes sense.
All right. So just to review, we've got this idea of, you know, a base load, which is your refrigerator, so to speak. And from the utility's perspective, they know that's always there. So they go out and they get a nuclear plant, which is hard to turn off or even to turn on, right? But it runs all the time to satisfy the base load, right?
And is base load is the same as baseline?
So yeah, you can think of it the same way, right? It's the minimum amount of electricity that you need all the time, right? So the utilities say, okay, there's this constant demand, and they satisfy that. And then they have assorted other electrical plants that they can turn on. And of course, each type of plant costs more or less money. And they're easier or harder to turn on. So now we have yet another concept here for the poor guys running the utility. They have what are called dispatchable power plants. That is to say, they have power plants that they can call up and say, hey, in 15 minutes, I need you to be online providing electricity. Right, very short notice. They can call them up and say go, right? And you pay for that capability, but they can do that to match the demand. Does that make sense?
So they're in some kind of network, some kind of legal and contractual arrangement with these other utilities, plants. They might be dormant, but then they can be called on as needed.
Exactly. And what they do is, like, I would imagine that, you know, they know at 8 o'clock every morning, they're going to need to turn on a certain plant because it's cheap. It's easy. They got a good relationship. They turn those and then they match through the course of the day. Okay.
Gotcha.
So you get this idea of a dispatchable power plant, a base load. You've got the variation in the day and you've got a concept that seasonally in I keep saying August 15th, right? It's the hottest day of the year and you have what's called the peak demand. And here's where the peaker plant comes in, right? Because the utility is trying to match minute by minute. But since the August 15th only happens once a year, right? There's a power plant. They need that last couple megawatts of power to keep the grid running. And they are willing to pay any amount of money for that to keep the grid going. And what they have are these things called peaker plants, which only turn on when the demand is very high, right? And they're incredibly expensive. And so the utility has these things in their capacity plan to be able to turn on, but the peaker plants that might turn on for 5 hours and then shut down for 3 weeks. Right, it's that kind of a circumstance, right? Those plants are there, and that's what a peaker plant is. It is there to satisfy the most extreme case when you have this high demand for power. Does that make sense?
Yes, that's well to run for just a few hours over a short period of time. Does that require a more energy get it up and running, and then to shut it down, much like a car going from 0 to 60 in 2 seconds would require maybe more energy than.
I think in my understanding. So I'm not an expert. My understanding is that depending on the type of plant you have, right, that the ability to turn it on and off varies. The time it takes to. So if you have a plant, like suppose you have a steam plant. Right, you got to boil the water. It's going to take a little while to boil the water, right? And so, it's not so much the energy it takes to start up, but the time it needs for the plant to get itself into a condition where it can contribute power to the grid.
Right. Okay. Right?
And so the advantage of the peaker plants, my understanding is that they can turn on relatively short notice, right? And so that's what a peaker plant is. You go a little bit deeper into this. So again, we're just using this August 15 analogy as an example, right? It's kind of it happens in other circumstances. But what you see, and I'll put in the show notes, there's an effort to there's this program called Shave the Peak, right? Which is to say, on August 15th, the utilities put out a call and say, hey, please don't drive your air conditioner to the maximum, right? For the next 3 hours, just, you know, give it a rest, you know, take a little bit warmer room because so we don't have to turn. And I know the place I used to work in August, the whole building would brown out. Because it was the place I was working was a huge energy drain, right? Just the nature of the stuff they were doing. And they would contract with the utility and say, okay, on that hot day, we'll shut down our stuff, save you. You're going to pay us some money for the privileges of us not making the demand on that day, right? But individual people can shave the peak. You get a text and it says, all right, turn off all the lights, you know, raise your air conditioning. Yeah, raise the air conditioning temperature a little bit. And you try. And why do people do that? Well, aside from the economic cost of that last expensive power plant, it also turns out that the peaker plants generally tend to be dirtier. They're older, they're dirtier, they're less efficient, they make more carbon dioxide, so they contribute more to global warming, and they tend to be located, because they're old power plants and the system has been so unjust for so long, the peaker plants tend to be located in environmental justice communities, places where, you know, it's not in a well-to-do town. It tends to be in a place where people are already under environmental stress, just historically.
And before environmental justice communities became a concept, they were planted
there.
In there.
Right. And you go down a whole path about, you know, racism and, you know, structural racism and fossil fuel and kind of stuff. But yeah, that's where they are. And like, just to add insult to injury, the days the peaker plants turn on also happen to be the worst air quality days, right? By definition. Yeah. So you have this circumstance where the peaker plant is in the place, you know, in the abusive place, and it's in the most abusive circumstance. You say, okay, that's not good. Right. So generally speaking, the setup is not great for these peaker plants. But you understand where it comes from, right? And it's like the demand is created. The utility has to supply it. Boom, they got to go get the junkiest old plant that's the most expensive to run, but they can get it, right? And that has a sort of level of unhappiness to it. All right. That's a peaker plant.
Gotcha.
Now we can paint an entirely different picture, a more beautiful picture around what's the future of these things. I mean, what could you do instead of, if you needed to say replace a peaker plant, right? You say, boy, it's economical. I need more capacity. I'm going to build a new peaker plant because I see, you know, there's more electric vehicles out there. We know there's going to be more demand. How would you do it? Well, then you get, that moves into a new vocabulary word, which you would call energy storage, right? And this is kind of breaks the paradigm of the utility. So what we said a few minutes ago was that the utility cannot store their electricity anywhere, right? They just historically don't have the facility to put the electrons in a bottle and let them back out when they need them, right? But now with the advent of new technologies, in particular battery technologies, which we can talk about, you can imagine a big enough battery that holds enough power that it could, for 5 hours, crank out 50 megawatts and do the job of the peaker plant, but without being dirty.
Yeah, yeah.
Right? And yes. So, yeah, it's a beautiful concept. So let's talk a little bit about energy storage, because it's a concept that people will become familiar with. You can say, I heard it first on the Climate Minute, energy storage, right? That make sense?
Sounds like a camel.
Well, so we want to store electricity. When we say a battery, a storage battery, we don't necessarily mean the thing on your laptop. Although oftentimes it comes down to the thing in your battery is a chemical, electrochemical storage, lithium ions, right? I mean, this is a particular way of storing energy. Oh. You can imagine something as simple as, in some places do this, when you have lots of electricity, you can pump water up a hill. And here's an important point I forgot to mention, right? If you want to build a new peaker plant, I mean, you might say, okay, go build a bunch of wind turbines, right? Or build me some solar panels, and we use that at the peak demand. And the problem is, this is, again, the buzzword you hear people say, renewable energies are intermittent.
That is, yeah,
the wind's not always shining, and the sun's, right, the wind's not shining. Wind's not blowing, the sun's not shining. And so you have this idea of dispatchable, right, where the utility says, gee, in 15 minutes, I need you to be providing power. Wind and solar don't do that because they only generate power. So this is another reason that you hear about storage in the connected to renewables, because you can take that electricity and store the electricity somewhere for use when you want it that better matches to the demand, right? So let's go back and talk about one way to store energy is to have a wind turbine cranking away, making electricity, using that electricity to run an electric pump that pumps water up to the top of the mountain, and it just sits in a big reservoir on the top of the cistern on the top of the mountain. And when you need electricity in 15 minutes, you press the open the valve, the water runs back down through a turbine, generates all the electricity you need, right? It's a beautiful thing. It's a way of storing the wind energy.
And does that exist today?
Depending on if you have a handy mountain, right? There are certain, you're right, there are certain places that they do it, but it depends on sort of natural, so it's not like a general solution. I mean, I've got this idea in my head, every town has a water tower. People don't object to a water tower too much, right? So there you go. You have a water tower, and you pump, when the wind's blowing, you pump the water up into the water tower, and now you put energy. See, that's the storing energy by lifting the water up to a height. And then when you need it, you open the valve, and the water comes back out of the water tower and generates it. I mean, it's a concept, right?
Yeah, okay.
So there's lots of ways to, I mean, one way that they say, really interesting, one way to store electricity is in hydrogen, right? So now you have a wind turbine that's making electricity. You take that electricity, and what you do is you essentially use the electricity to break water into its component oxygen and hydrogen. Mm. You capture the hydrogen into a tank. And now the hydrogen can be turned around and it can be burned like a fuel, right? But it's completely carbon dioxide free. So again, hydrogen is a way to store electricity. And you may see this stuff pop up. Once you hear the concept of the description, all of a sudden you start seeing it everywhere, right? Hydrogen storage of electricity, it's kind of futuristic, but the Biden administration is committed, you know, research money to how do you, so anyway, so this is a second storage.
Okay. Okay.
Very, very interesting stuff. But let's come back to the peaker plant.
Got to come back. Yeah.
Got to come back to the peaker. We got, you can imagine a big lithium ion storage battery, much like the Tesla battery in your car or the Tesla thing they want to sell to have on the wall of your garage, right? Storage. You could build a battery instead of a dirty electric power plant, fill a battery up with electricity and have, I mean, that's just one concept, right? So point being that the electric utility market is disrupted by renewable energies. It offers opportunities to solve problems that the utility had, which is this issue of the last megawatt of demand on the hot day, right? How do they get that, right? You could do that with clean technologies. And from a climate perspective, that's an interesting idea to have in your head, right?
Well, yeah, that would sound like that would be the proper thing to do, given the emergency that we're in right now.
You got it. I mean, I couldn't say it any better than that. But, and so I tell you what I'll do is we'll put up some links to some of the stuff we talked about on the blog. The blog's at massclimateaction.org/blog. You can look up, you can find Shave the Peak. You know, I'll put in the dashboard that the utilities have, the minute-by-minute dashboard, all that kind of cool stuff. And it's kind of geeky, but it's kind of interesting once you dig at it a little bit. If you have a question about the podcast, you have ideas or things we ought to be talking about, please send us an email to podcast@massclimateaction.net. Let us know what we're doing right and wrong. We really appreciate it. You can listen to this show on your smartphone using Stitcher, TuneIn Radio, any of the modern podcast distribution apps. Please ask your friends to listen to us on their favorite modern podcast distribution app on their smartphone. It helps spread the good word. We want to thank our friend D.R. Tucker for his continuing research support. And we want to close you where we always close by saying that we recognize the necessity of personal accountability for our actions, that we accept responsibility for building a durable future, and that we believe it's our patriotic duty as citizens to speak out. And because of that, we have to insist that the United States transform its energy sector over the next decade under a just and equitable plan that uses regulation, investment, and a price on carbon to safeguard our future. So, Richard, thank you so much for being here.
You're welcome. I enjoyed it.
Good, good, good. Thanks, everyone, for listening. We'll talk again soon. Bye-bye.
Very cool.